Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. In studio with me this week is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski, and we'll be able to take your questions today. Mr. Mayor, how are you?
Nice to be here. Hi, Stan. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for being here, as always. We appreciate it. You enjoying your summer?
My pleasure. Summer's going very well so far, yep. A lot of things going on, but the weather overall's cooperated for most of our events and stuff, so overall it's been a good summer.
Well, let's get right to the questions. We've had one come in from Jim, who asks, with the attention given to West Lafayette's State Street project, I wonder if Lafayette has considered improvements to State Road 26 as it runs through town to the Wabash, particularly at Five Points, he says, which could be a welcoming, attractive district with some interesting storefronts, is run down, traffic is restricted, he says, and he believes that's not welcoming for visitors. He asks, might Lafayette think bigger and try to develop that thoroughfare and the neighborhood that stretches to Columbian Park and the soon-to-be new and improved Loeb Stadium?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. We've talked about that here recently. You know, we have been focusing a great deal on the urban core and that downtown area and the surrounding neighborhoods around downtown, whether it's Centennial, Romick, Ellsworth, all those areas. And then, of course, working with the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation on how we develop that riverfront and begin to build those amenities, that core downtown and those surrounding neighborhoods to create that overall experience that we want for people in our community. I think Jim's question is right on the money. We've talked about Five Points here in the last couple months. I think I can't go into great detail at this point, but I think at the beginning of the year, you'll see a proposal go out that we'll look for a company to help us study the Five Points area sometime in January, probably get ready to start looking at that as we wrap up a few other things that we're working on and a few other projects that we know have some real potential in that downtown area. And as we begin to move up that hill towards Five Points, I think you'll begin to look at us to study that area. We certainly believe the new stadium is an important piece for the Columbian Park neighborhood and those surrounding neighborhoods, the Oakland neighborhood. And we want to tie all that together. Again, I think Jim's spot on. How do we tie that urban core and that downtown experience with the surrounding neighborhoods, bring that up Main Street into the Columbian Park area and tie all those amenities together? And he's thinking along the exact same lines we are. And in January, I think you'll see us get started on that process. We'll probably work with an outside firm that will come in and help us study all the buildings and the streets and all of that stuff, meet with people, some of the owners of those buildings, and see, get kind of some preliminary data put together that'll help us look at a long-term plan for that area.
We've had a couple of listeners over the last several months talk about that area, and as you look at it, you know, you've got a couple of one-way streets, you've got a couple of two-way streets, and it's a kind of strangely designed intersection. Would you potentially look at traffic flow and look at changing some of the way those streets are oriented?
Well, certainly when you do a master plan, you know, we'll look at everything from the utilities that are there, water, sewer, stormwater, fiber optics. We'll look at the intersections, the traffic lights, the traffic patterns. We'll look at the buildings, the condition of the buildings, the uses of the building, the zonings in that area, and of course how it ties on further back into Columbian Park. So, you know, when you do a master planning study like that, all of those things will certainly be looked at.
You mentioned, and Jim mentioned, the stadium. I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. You mentioned to me some months ago on this program that if the Lafayette Aviators started to do well and it seemed like that was a revenue-generating possibility, then there might be a new stadium where Loeb Stadium now sits. You've since announced that the city plans to spend about $10 million to either renovate or create a new stadium there. Tell me how you decided that was something you could actually go forward with.
Well, you know, we've been talking about that for quite some time, and I want to make it clear, I don't think the Aviators will ever generate enough money to pay for a $10 million stadium. But, you know, we've been talking about that for some time. We've been over to Kokomo on a couple different trips. We've talked about with a lot of people in the community different uses for the stadium. You know, Kokomo also has a soccer team, but we know there's some other opportunities here with, we think, some programming that we could bring in to a new stadium with artificial turf and different amenities. And, you know, we began looking at our budgets quite some time ago, and we're getting ready to do the 2017 budget. And, you know, you continue to do that financial planning, and our finances are at a place where we really felt comfortable you know, saying at this time it's something that, that we could do. We'll look for financing that out of our tax increment financing and our edit dollars. We have kind of like the school corporation announced earlier in the week, we have several bonds that come off. So we're not looking for any, you know, additional revenue, new revenue from the state, any added taxes or anything like that. We can do this within our normal budget cycles for those funds. And we think this is the right time. Loeb Stadium has been a historic landmark. I know people have lots of fond memories there, including myself. But I think everybody agrees that we have band-aided it as much as we can. And there's just not much else you can do to it structurally to make sure that we keep it safe for any, you know, continuing number of significant number of years into the future. And then, you know, and I've seen you up there, Stan. I mean, you know, there's just not anything else to do to those bathrooms that make people want to use those restrooms, those locker rooms, the way they're designed, the ADA, all the amenities that people are looking for now. You know, we need to take it down and build a new stadium and build it in a way that really meets the needs of now. And looking 25, 30 years down the road, we want it to be there for a long time after we're gone and still be able to be functional. You know, it's important to us that we keep it in Columbian Park. You know, people have asked me, and maybe some of your listeners, did you consider moving it out closer to the interstate and some of those things? And, you know, we talked about that, but quite frankly, not very long. You know, we think keeping that in kind of in the urban core, in that neighborhood, a part of the overall Columbian Park experience where you can go swimming and go to the zoo or have a picnic and take in a ball game. And also what a new stadium might be mean for renewal in the Columbian Park and those surrounding neighborhoods, really enticing people to live there, to be homeowners, investors, to invest in it. Anybody, we think a stadium has potential to do that. And so we think keeping it there is an important fabric of Columbian Park, an important piece of the community.
Have you asked either Jefferson High School, the American Legion, the Aviators, the Colt World Series, who use that park with regularity, to help kick in some money to help offset that $10 million cost?
No, not really at this point. We haven't kicked off any fundraising. You know, we're going to look at some naming opportunities. You know, a lot of stadiums have naming opportunities. We'll certainly look at that. You know, we're hoping there's somebody be interested. I don't have anybody lined up, and we don't want to create any false impressions. But, I mean, we're hoping there's some folks out there that might want to be involved in that. Certainly, we have people in the community that have the financial resources and have meant so much to this community over the years that certainly having their name on the stadium or the field would be very appropriate for the community. And so we're going to work into that phase. And then we'll look at some other fundraising opportunities. I mean, I have had people send me emails that said they would contribute to a new stadium. So I think there are people and organizations out there.
Are you talking big donors? Naming donors?
You know, some of these were just, I guess what you might, you know, everyday citizens that said they would do what they can. I think people are going to get behind the stadium. So the good part is, if we didn't get a penny, I mean, we never would have made the announcements. If we didn't get a penny from outside money, we have the resources to do the project. I don't put myself in those kind of situations. So, but certainly any money that we can get through fundraising, through naming opportunities, we're going to explore that and push it very hard. But, you know, we didn't go into this or make that announcement with that being a necessity to get this this project done. But we're hoping some of that will come forward, and we think the stadium's going to be a great addition to the community.
You said you didn't think that the money brought in by the Aviators would ever be enough to finance $10 million. How is revenue from the team? Because as you and I have been to, you and I have seen each other at a number of games already this summer, and it seems to me that the crowds have kind of stabilized at, well, a few hundred people a game, not anywhere near certainly what it was on opening night. Do you need to maintain a certain level, and where is that level?
Well, you know, the last game I was at, they were a little bit over 1,200, which was the second high, and that counts season tickets and the people that are actually in the stands, obviously. And that was their second highest night. That night I was there, they told me they were averaging in between 800 and 900 fans a game, which they were happy with for the first year. Getting the word out, you know, getting the team put together, they felt like the crowds were pretty good and people were getting behind the team. The number of people in the stands doesn't affect us from a revenue standpoint. We just have a and it's a pretty minimal lease agreement. It's not very large with the team, that they just pay us a lump sum for use of the stadium, and then selling the tickets, getting the people in the stands, doing the marketing, that's up to them, and they have to do that to make their money for their operation. So attendance doesn't affect what us does. Now we'll see when we get a different stadium, you know, what that agreement might look like at this time. But particularly with Loeb and some of the challenges that Loeb had, and some of the challenges that we had to overcome to be able to do some of the food service that they wanted to do. And I think it's been great. I mean, I've told everybody, MKE has done everything they told me that they would do, from the quality of the team to the food and the amenities that they're serving, to the entertainment, you know, having different things out there, different themes, different activities between the innings. They've done everything. I think Asa, their local business manager here, is doing a great job. He communicates well. He wants to be part of the community. And so, you know, overall, I'm really pleased where we're at. You know, we're a little bit halfway through the season. They finished a half a game out. Got some kids in the All-Star game. And the rivalry with Kokomo is starting to pick up a little bit. And I think we're going to continue to build on that. I haven't spoke personally with Mayor Goodnight in a while, but hopefully him and I can make some kind of bet next year for the series, and really promote that rivalry between Lafayette and the Kokomo Jackrabbits. And I think we've got a good future.
You could have a city game. He could find people from Kokomo. You could find people from Greater Lafayette. You could have a game on the field between your two cities.
Yeah, and at the end of this month, as part of that, you know, we have a zoo night that's coming up pretty soon with an Aviators game, and then we have also a game at the end of the month where the Lafayette Police Department's going to play the Lafayette Fire Department in a charity game after the Aviators game, and so people watch for, you know, all that to come out. We like to get a good crowd there for the Aviators game and to watch our policemen and firemen play for charity. So, you know, watch for the information that will be coming out on that, and we'll see if we can pack the stadium.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. You can get your question on this program by calling us at 496-1999, sending emails to ask@wbaa.org, or tweeting your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. I wanted to ask you a little bit about some reporting I did last week about the crime statistics for the first 6 months of this year. And basically, crime is down just a little bit, about 3% overall for the first 6 months, and that's major crimes. Mm-hmm. And this comes on the heels of you and Chief Flannelly saying, hey, we need to crack down. We need to do some stuff about the drug problems we've got and all the crime that's associated with that. Do you feel that those initiatives are working, at least in the short term?
Well, I mean, that's hard to say. I mean, certainly I am glad to see that the major crimes are down, you know, even though it's a little bit, and I know aggravated assaults are down even and larger, but, you know, it's those initiatives, and I'm not going to divert from the goal, the mission that I've always talked about with those initiatives. I mean, those initiatives are long-term solutions and hope long-term answers to the issues that we're dealing with. We still know that most of our crime, particularly our violent crime, is driven by drug abuse, drug addiction, drug trafficking, opioid abuse. So we know that we have to tackle that from the enforcement side, the addiction side, the mental illness side, the rehabilitation side. So we know that we have to tackle that, and that's more of a long term. If you're going to really drive those numbers down significantly and keep them down, that's really long term. We have got very good response, I'll say, from putting the squad cars, the take-home squad car programs out into the neighborhoods. People really seem to like having those cars out there. We have noticed people have called in and said, even asked, hey, there's a police car. Oh, well, okay, they live there. Even people didn't realize. And so we think that is going to be effective, will continue to be effective. It's got we think with the younger officers, that's a very nice amenity, and we think that number will continue to grow. We think it will be a catalyst for more policemen to live inside the city limits, which we think has a lot of dual benefits, even besides just the visibility of the squad car. Having the policeman living inside the city limits is important to us. So, you know, all of those things that we're doing with the directed patrol, the squad cars, the ordinance enforcement, all of those things, I think over a long time will make a difference. But it is a long term. I mean, I'm a realist. I know 6 months from now, I could be talking to you and you could be telling me that those numbers might be up a couple percentage points too. I know that this is a long-term, multi-year approach, but we feel we're taking the right approach to tackle this problem long-term. Obviously, I'm gratified to see that they are down a little bit. That's wonderful. But it's not time to do the happy dance or anything. We need to stay on it. We need to continue to add to it.
Clearly, there's been a lot about the police in the news, especially in these last couple of weeks with what's going on in Louisiana and Minnesota and elsewhere. Do you have any police officers who you think might come to you or have maybe come to you and said, hey, we understand that the view of the police is not as good as it could be, that maybe I don't want to take the car home because it puts a target on my back because now people know where I live in case they have a bone to pick with the police?
Well, that's kind of a two-part question. I'll answer that. First of all, the tragic events in Dallas and that also happened to the police officers, just really does hit home how dangerous being a police officer is anywhere in the United States, big cities, small towns. It's a dangerous job where people risk their life every day to support their communities, protect and serve, risk their life for others. And we certainly always have to keep that in mind and send out our gratitude and thanks to the men and women around this country that are in law enforcement and the service they provide. And with that being said, I still think the vast, vast majority, even though we see it in the media a lot, and it should be. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But I still think the vast majority of people in this country strongly support law enforcement. They might be the silent majority that we don't hear from quite as much. But I think most Americans support the men and women who wear the badge, who wear the uniform, that they understand they have a very difficult job to do and have to make split-second decisions sometimes that can have enormous ramifications for them and others. And I think most people still support them. And I think particularly in Lafayette, West Lafayette, and Tippecanoe County, a lot of people support our men and women in our uniform. And we're going to continue to do that and continue to show all kinds of support. As far as the take-home car, no policeman has come to tell me that. I mean, it probably crosses their mind. I mean, I think it would cross their mind as once in a while just having that car maybe make them a little bit easier target. It probably doesn't in the long run, no. Most policemen understand that if somebody really was out to get them, it wouldn't be very difficult to find out, where they live, what their schedule is, some things like that. They understand that's part of the job. We've all received threats. I received threats when I was a policeman. And it's not a fun part of the job, but it's part of the job that you deal with. Having that car is a great amenity for them, though, because it's good for the neighborhood. It's good for them getting back and forth to work, ease of equipment, things like that, transferring back and forth. So, it's a program we're going to continue with, and we're going to continue to look to expand it. Certainly, if there was a policeman that just said, I don't want the car because of that, we're not going to force that car on anybody. But right now, it's going very well.
The only crime, the only major crime that is up over the first 6 months is theft, which happens to be the one that in your department and in most departments is the one that you see the most. I mean, it has long been the largest number of major crimes. And so it's the one that's up. Are you doing anything to be able to target thefts specifically?
No, not that I'm aware of. I mean, I'd have to double check with the chief, but not that I'm aware of. I'd have to look at the percentage, but a decent percentage of theft also, we have to remember, is shoplifting. And each year, shoplifting has continued to increase, not just here, but, around the country. And so a lot of that, some of that is out of our control. Do we have an initiative specifically directed at theft? No, other than through our community outreach. Sergeant Galloway is just doing a tremendous job for us, reminding people to lock their cars. And there was an article here recently that auto theft goes up in the summer, but so do car break-ins. Just getting people to lock their cars, keep them secure, neighbors watching out for others, because a lot of those thefts are people stealing items out of vehicles.
And interestingly, it actually spiked here in January of this year. I think you had 31 auto break-ins in January, which was the highest of any non-summer month in at least the last 5 or 6 years. And so that is certainly contributing to that number as well.
Yeah, and that, I think several of those were people that were
warming up their cars.
And got the car unlocked or people jumped in, which is unfortunate. But, you know, like I said, our community outreach, the use of Nextdoor, the use of social media, the position that we created that Sergeant Galloway in, and he has just done a tremendous job. He's had a lot of neighborhood meetings. He's had a lot of meetings at City Hall. We're really doing that outreach. We're trying to do that crime prevention education because we know that it can drive those numbers down. Several years ago, and I probably shouldn't bring it up because it wasn't well received, but you know how I am. I just talk. So, you know, we tried a program where we put notes on people's cars about, hey, we came by, policeman came by, your car was unlocked. Please begin to lock your cars. And a lot of people felt that that was waste of police resources. And we stopped it. But really, you know, looking back on that, we probably should have kept going with that. And we might start that again because a lot of those thefts that you're talking about are happening because people's vehicles are unlocked. If we could get them to lock their vehicle, one, they wouldn't happen. Two, then all the police resources that running all those calls, the one category that's up, could be more directed to street crimes unit, drug enforcement, investigation of serious crimes such as robberies and things like that. And so,
well, let me ask you for a second about redirecting some of those resources, because the one thing I've noticed looking at all of the crime mapping that's been done over the last 6 months is that a couple of things have happened. One, the heat maps that were released in terms of where all the crimes happened at the beginning of this year still track fairly well with what's going on. For instance, just north of downtown, within about a mile of the river, that is still the highest density crime area. Yep. Are you able to redirect more to areas like that where you see a continuing problem?
We are on a limited basis, not at the level we would like yet. We're still in the hiring process to, you know, we still have several openings at the police department, and we're working to hire those, and we have some officers in training. But even with that, because we have expanded the department, we do have the allocations that the chief, and we've talked about this before, and in the last month or so, he's really started it, where we are sending directed patrol and assigning officers into those hot spots. They're staying there almost the entire shift. We have just a few other officers then for certain areas where we don't have that same amount of activity that are kind of just running all the report calls, the simple things. So we're not tying up these guys and gals from doing some more hardcore investigations and more directed patrol, really trying to be proactive. And so, you know, that is one of our initiatives that we've talked about. We've implemented several of the others, and the chief about a month ago began to work on that one, and we'll increase that as you know, some of these officers come out of training. We continue to hire officers, and I mean that, and that's a challenge also around the United States. I mean, if you'll check, you'll see that a lot of police departments, people aren't applying for the police jobs like they used to, and so that becomes a challenge. We will not lower our standards here in our community just to hire people, and so if it takes us a little while longer to get the right people into those jobs, then we'll take that time to do it. But that is another challenge that the police department deals with, is hiring of qualified police applicants to fill those spots around the United States. A lot of policemen are retiring. They've reached that retirement age, and because of some of the things that are happening around the country and some of the negativity, a lot of people are retiring. So that's just another challenge that the departments face.
Let me ask you one other thing about the directed patrols. I came across, just as a layperson looking at the last 6 months of data, one house, and I won't say where it is, that had more than 75 charges related to things that went on there. I can't say how many police calls there were, but you can look at the charging documents, and it was a dozen a month for 6 months. And I'm wondering if you're able to, using these mapping technologies, be able to target, hey, we see that this particular property has a disproportionate number of crimes being charged from it.
A couple answers to that. Yes, we can. The chief is working with Purdue University and on some software, analytic software, that will help us even more. And to your listeners, please don't quote me on this, but you know, the chief has already looked at it, and it is extremely small. It again, don't quote me. It's 2 or 3%, I think, is what he told me, of individuals and locations that cause an enormous amount of all the crime in the community. It is actually a very small percentage. And so he is working on that with our specialist that we have, Steve Hawthorne, and the work that he does. But he's also working with Purdue on some software development. And then as a city, and we're hopefully the next few months we'll bring it to city council. I have some few revisions that the city attorney has asked me to look at with the chief, and him and I need to get together. We're looking at a nuisance ordinance. So when you have a property that has repeated police calls, repeated violations, particularly serious police calls, there'll be some, there'll be some fines in there, and there'll be some other, there's remedies if they clean it up too. But we're going to take some of that in ordinance enforcement to a different level for properties exactly like what you're describing, where we're just running police calls over and over and over. And other communities, a couple in Indiana, but several in other states have instituted ordinances. We're looking at one from Minnesota and some other places to kind of piece those together in one that we think's right for our community, but we're absolutely looking at an ordinance, a local ordinance right now to address what you're talking about.
Targeting occupants, targeting landlords, both?
It would be targeting the property owner.
Okay.
Because, you know, in my mind, the property owner's responsible for what happens at their property.
Let me spend our last couple of minutes on something else the police department is doing, which is writing an ordinance that says we're going to charge a flat $150 fee for charging for copies of police body camera footage. That's the maximum amount allowed in state law, a new law that just went into effect on July 1st. How did you decide to go right to the state maximum there?
Well, we the deputy chief of police and again, Steve Hawthorne, some others, they've looked at that, what that will take to process. If you look at all the state law, when somebody makes a request, and, you know, we really hope, we don't want it so cheap either that, you know, we got every neighbor making a request for something that happens on the street.
No, but we will say, though, that the law was actually designed to make it easier to get access to the body camera.
And we want people access, but we're also not going to, we don't want it to get to the point, you probably saw the article in the paper, there are already police departments in Indiana and police departments around the country that are already getting rid of the body cameras that have had them for less than a year or 2 years because they can't keep up with the quest. They can't afford the storage up in the cloud for all the data that they have to keep. And they're already getting rid of the cameras. We do not want that to happen here. Two things. We think we took our time when a lot of people jumped in really, really early. And we took our time and did our research, and we've come up with a system that, one, doesn't take away from the officer's ability to do their job. When they're done for the day, they can bring it in. They simply put it in a docking station. The software pulls out the videos. It assigns it to the right case numbers. It puts it through our system into our records division, and the officers don't have to do that. In some places, the officers are doing that themselves. We have a system that does that for us. So, one, we're good there that we're not going to take away from the officer's time being out on the street. And two, when somebody makes a request, we're going to have to pull that case. We're going to have to pull that video. Somebody's going to have to watch the whole thing that they asked for. If there's things in the state law that have to be redacted, if faces have to be blocked out, there's things about medical conditions, there's all kinds of different things in there. That's going to take somebody a significant amount of time. And if you think what somebody's hourly rate is with benefits and all our equipment, we'll be well over $150 on some of our requests, I assure you, in our cost.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, that's the time we've got. Thanks, as always, for your time. We'll do it again next month.
Absolutely. Thank you, Stan.
And join us next week for our conversation with Frankfurt's Chris McBarnes here on Ask the Mayor. And remember, you can find all of these shows archived at WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.